My name is Tucker Gibbs. I'm 14 years old. Today is January 25th, and I'm speaking with Dan Ohl, who is my math teacher. We are recording this interview in Providence, Rhode Island. So, Dan, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a town just outside of Buffalo, so we called the South Towns, and it was called West Seneca. And I think of myself as a native Buffalonian, right? And so all of my sports team, I just love the Bills and the Sabres, and of course I'm one of the few, but we are proud. But yeah, I think there's a strong sense of community in the Western New York area. So I have met many Buffalonians who think of themselves still as Buffalonians, even though I haven't lived there for, 30 years.
And how long did you live in Buffalo?
So I lived in the same house, and I lived in the same town for my entire life until I went away to college. And so it was funny because the house that my parents bought, I like to think of it, they bought it because of me. I have six older siblings and two younger siblings. And the six older, so when I was about to be born, my parents realized that the house they were in was too small. So they had to find a bigger house. And so we ended up in the town that we're in. We ended up in the house that my parents lived at for 40 years because, I was about to be born. So my parents just moved out of that house about 3 or 4 years ago. So they were there a long time.
What was your relationship with your siblings like?
Youngest, oldest? Yeah. I think, so like I said, there's the six older and then there's the two younger. And there was like this weird thing. So the first six were born within like 8 years. So my parents had them really close together. And then there's like 6.5 years before I was born. And then there was another 3.5 years. And then my younger brothers are twins. And so growing up, I grew up in this really big family. But for a lot of my time, especially I think like later lower school and like middle school years, I thought of myself in some ways like an only child in this huge family because the first two were girls and the second two were boys and the third two were were girls, boys, girls, so they all had each other. And then, like, twins, like, there's something special about twins, right? So they had each other. And so I grew up at times thinking, like, oh, I'm different or I'm the loner in this big family. But, the older we all got, the closer we all got, too. My older siblings moved away, went to college, and then, like, middle school and high school, I ended up being, like, the old kid in the family. So then I was like the oldest one. And so I remember that when the next oldest, my sister, right? She was just old enough that I was annoying to her. And she was, in charge when her parents went out or whatever. And so I would call her Ms. Mom. And I would be like, you can't tell me what to do, Ms. Mom, right? And it was like really annoying. And then when they all moved off, then I became the older one. And then I realized somewhere down the line, like for my younger brothers, I was like, Mr. Dad. It was like that kind of relationship which got flipped. And of course, then I was annoyed by, the young kids. And that was annoying to me as well. But we're close now. I love having a huge family. So we're planning now a get-together so that everyone can be there for my parents' 60th anniversary. Wow. Yeah, right? And, like, trying to organize it is a pain, but it's so much fun when we're all together. And the cousins all, like, there's 30 of them all together. And when they get together, it's like they never were apart, right? It's just so close. And so it's a lot of fun having a big family like that.
Do you have any funny stories of you or a family member that you'd like to share?
Oh my gosh, funny stories. My whole life is funny stories with that family. I think, oh my gosh. Oh. So my parents, like you have to understand, with as many parents or as many kids, right? they were pretty strict, right? I mean, we lived in a pretty regimented sort of organized house, and we had the rules and everything else. And yet, there were moments where my parents were just hysterical. And, you know, as a kid, I never saw them as being funny or being, like, goofy, right? You know, you see them as being the rule makers.
Yeah.
And my, there was, what was I was trying to think, let's see, college maybe? We were playing, we were all around for, like, some holiday. And I think we were playing, like, some sort of charades. And my, you know, my mom was doing it. And at the time, she, you know, she had to be probably, like, 60 at the time. So she's a little bit older. And she's, like, she picks up the thing, and she's like, no, you, you, and she starts making these motions, and I'm like, well, what is going on? And she's just like, and someone's like, Julia Childs, and they're like, yes, and it was, oh my gosh, crazy. And my dad, I don't know how this happened, but there was, like, through our church, this opportunity to do, like, this big, like, I don't know, like, production, and everybody would, like, put on these skits, and there would be, like, some silly theme weaved its way through. He did this insane, and this was, like, repeatedly throughout the years, this, I don't know if you've ever seen this, this costume where the pants of the costume was a full suit. So it had, like, arms hanging off. It had, like, a shirt, a jacket, and tie. And then the bottom part with the legs of the, like, it was, like, a full body within this, like, these pants, right? So if you can imagine, like, your lower half just being, like, everything. And then a giant, giant hat. And the hat would sit above the head, and it would come down to, like, the rib cage. Right? So there's this giant hat, and then there's these pants, and then a belly, a bare belly. And so here's my dad, who I'm thinking of, like, this rule breaker. And on the belly is stuck a nose, two eyes, and lipstick around the belly button. Right? So you see his belly button with lipstick around it, like a mouth. And so I think the very first time I saw this, I didn't even know it was him. Like, so out on stage comes this person, right, wearing this, you know, suit and the hat, and a song with whistling starts. It was like the, I think the Andy Griffith Show or whatever, and the belly starts moving in and out like this to the music. And so it looks like this giant face just, like, breathing in and out of these, and the belly button going, and you're like, what is going on? This is so bizarre. And then at the end of it, this person takes the hat off and, like, that's my dad. I'm like, what is going on? Who is this person? I don't think I could ever bring these two people together. Oh my gosh. And so he would do that. He did it multiple times. He got multiple costumes. Like, there was one, I think one of my younger brothers did it with, like, a baseball cap. You know, my dad's was, like, a big top hat. And, oh my gosh. My family's crazy sometimes. But that was a good one.
And where do your parents live now?
So they still live in the same town. They moved from this giant house. I mean, it was, like, a big house with, you know, a big yard for all the kids. But they moved about, like, it's a half mile away to a set of condos. So they live there now. And it's, you know, they're 82 and 83. It's perfect. My mom has always wanted to move to Florida. She hates the snow. She hates the Buffalo weather. And yet, like, that's where their lives are built. And so it was really hard for my dad to sort of, like, think of himself without that core group of friends or the familiar landmarks or all those things that you build your life around. So at some point they decided to forego the thinking about going to Florida and just stay and just make it, you know, easier living. So that's where they're at. I still have one sibling, a sister, who's, like, about 15 minutes away from them. And then a couple more within, like, 45 minutes of that area. Okay. So, yeah.
So, are you the furthest sibling away?
No, it's really cool. We have, like, The furthest sibling is in Louisiana. So it's my oldest brother, and he was in the Air Force. So he and his wife and his kids traveled all around the world and lived in, like, Germany and England and, you know, different places in the United States. And I think he ended up in Louisiana a couple times at the same base and loved it. So when he retired from the Air Force, he stayed there. And then I have a sister in North Carolina with her family. And then there's three of us in sort of like the New England area. So we have sort of like a separate, like, little clan out here. So two of my brothers and I are out here. And we do this fun, you know, like New England New Year's Eve tradition. So I don't know, it's been like probably 10, 15 years where our families get together on New Year's Eve. And then we stay over at each other's house. And so, like, each year we'll switch houses, but we're together, you know, as families. And then the last couple of years, other families of ours from, you know, sort of like different parts came up. So my sister from North Carolina came up this year. She stayed with us. So here, we don't feel like we're, you know, it's nice that we don't feel like...
Alone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We still feel like we had each other. And that's actually how I ended up out here. My brother is in Worcester, Mass. And when I was looking at colleges, I was looking at a whole bunch of different places, and I looked at Holy Cross, which is in Worcester, and I eventually chose that. And I think, like, maybe I didn't consciously go through that process, but I probably chose it simply because, like, he was there, and it was like, you know, even though I'm moving 8 hours away from home, I still have family there.
Yeah.
And so so that's how I sort of moved out east. And I wanted to stay. I liked it out here.
So do you have a nickname in school? Or a nickname among your family? How'd you get it?
Yes. And we, in high school, couple of close friends. I get together with my high school friends a lot, actually, more so than my college friends. But we were just talking about this nickname this over Thanksgiving when we saw each other. My nickname in high school is No Pain. No Pain. And there was a couple different things where, like playing sports, or like we would play at lunch, we would play like this crazy, weird, violent game during lunch in high school. There was like a huge parking lot, and which was like a play area, so there were no cars or anything like that. So we would play this game called the Powerball, and it was a mixture of like soccer and hockey and like football. Like, you were allowed to like hit people, and like there was this row of bushes, so people were like check people into the bushes, and it was interesting. Anyways, so there'd be moments where I would go down, I'd be bleeding or whatever. But like for me in high school, I was like always about like just keep going. And so, you know, I'd be bleeding, still playing. And so they started calling me No Pain. And then at the end of every school year, we took these field trips. And I went to a really small high school. So my high school... I know I'm getting way off topic, but I'll get back to it. Don't worry. I'll remember. No Pain. Got it. But there were about 50 kids in the upper school. So my class was about, you know, anywhere, like 1 year is 11, 1 year is 17. So small classes. And we would go at the end of the year on this field trip where the freshman and sophomore would go for like three and a half weeks on a trip across the country. And then the juniors and seniors would go for about the same amount of time. And we got on this converted school bus, which had like a rack on the top for luggage. We'd pack up the tents and we'd pack up the food. And we would go to like all the national parks. And so you'd go to like on our Northwest trip, we would hit like the Badlands in North Dakota. And then we went to the Grand Canyon. That was like as far south we went. And we went to Yosemite and Yellowstone. Like, it was awesome. And you lived with, like, if you think about this, right, you lived with your peers for, like, three and a half weeks. So when we went to the Badlands, this was one of the most memorable places I've ever been in North Dakota. Have you ever been?
No.
It's amazing. So you have, like, it's just, like, barren and, like desert. But then you've got these huge mesas just sticking up out of the ground. And everything's, it's just so, it's, like, so amazing. And you get to start to see, like how humans, like, where our place is in the earth and the world, and when we start to think of ourselves in cities and towns as being so important and so essential, then you get out to nowhere, and it just feels different. So one of these times, we're out there in the Badlands, and we're playing, like, Capture the Flag. And so we're running up and down the sides of these huge mesas, and, you know, there's scrub and rocks and cacti.
Oh, boy.
And so, yeah, right. Now you know where this is going. So, you know, again, I'm, like, super... I think I was a ninth grader, right? So I'm, like, super focused in the game. Like, we got to win the whole thing. And I'm with my friends. And I'm running down the side. And I trip. And I put my hands out. And one of my hands falls directly on a cactus. And so I've got, like, blood. And then I've got, like, these cacti spines sticking out, right? And so I'm like, oh, my God, right? I'm like, shh, don't let them know where we are. So we're, like, hunkered down behind a rock. And I'm at River. It's like, pick them out. Pick them out like this. And they're like, you're insane. Like, go back. Take care of it. I'm like, no, we got to win. And so that's, like, the whole no pain, right? I think that's actually probably where it started, was that freshman year. And then from there, it just got worse. I just kept getting hurt and destroyed. It was like, whatever. But... yeah, that's a weird nickname, isn't it? It is. You gotta admit.
So, what clubs and sports did you play in high school?
So, being at a small school, right, we were involved in a lot. And sort of, some of it was, like, by necessity. So if you didn't do it, it wasn't going to happen. So I played soccer all my years. And then I did a couple years of basketball, and I think I did 1 year of baseball. But then, like, we did student council, I was involved in that, and yearbook, was involved in that, you know, and then, like, whatever else pops up, like, the math event has happening, it's like, well, you know, there's 50 people, half of you gotta do it, or, you know, like, so we were involved. I think some of the cool things we did throughout the year, which I don't know if they're really clubs or whatever, but you know, we would have, like, a backpacking trip. So, like, there'd be a fall weekend, like a 3-day weekend, where similarly to the field trip at the end of the year, you just sort of, like, backpack off into the woods, you're hanging out for the 3 days. There's a rock climbing in the spring, which was just a single day. So, like, lots of stuff to do. And I think we ended up, like, spending a lot of time together, like, just because, you know, it's like your second family. Yeah, like, just like your friends, right? And, like, you spend more time with them than your family at times. So, yeah.
Did you enjoy school?
Loved it. Yeah, I think, well, yes and no, right? I mean, like, homework, but I love school. Like, I think some people, it fits, like, their personalities and everything. So I liked high school a lot, and I think the smallness of it, and the person, the close interpersonal relationships that we had with teachers. I think teacher relationships are a lot like we have here, where it's not like a strict divide. Some of our teachers we call by their first name, some by their last name. And, you know, I loved the challenge. So the school was, it was a hard one, but I loved it. Like, I liked to learn. I liked to challenge myself. I didn't love, like, the day-to-day work. I tended to be a little bit of a procrastinator. But, you know, like, when I was in the middle of a class discussion or whatever, that was awesome. I didn't love middle school. I loved elementary, right? I loved upper school. I did not like middle school. The 7th and 8th grade year were hard for me. You know, like, I was at a bigger school, so I hadn't gotten to my high school yet. And, you know, I didn't know my place. I was young for my class. And so I always felt like a little bit out of place. Like, I never really felt like I knew what was going on socially. Like, it always felt like somebody else was having a discussion that I didn't really get. And then, so that was hard. I liked the school part of it, but I didn't like the difficulty that I had sort of managing and navigating the social waters. And I don't know if that's why I ended up sort of teaching middle school, but I do know that that was hard. But the rest of school I loved. Yeah.
Did you have a favorite subject in school?
I've always... So, I'm trying to think. Like, when I was younger, I was always drawn toward, you know, reading. Like, I loved to read. And then as I got older, I think I sort of really threw myself into the maths and sciences. I love, like, experimenting and doing and blowing things up. And so we got to that in high school. That was always fun. But I always felt comfortable... You know, of course you go to, like, what you're comfortable with, right? And so I grew up reading, and so in school it's like, hey, I get to read. Like, this is almost as good as, like, sitting at home and on the couch and reading. Yay! You know, like, this isn't hard. And then, you know, when I felt like I was good at math and science, I'm like, of course that feels good to do that. And I've never, this is interesting, I've never loved writing. Writing's always been hard for me. I have to work hard at writing. Even today, like, when I'll write emails or simple stuff, like, things that I feel like I need to edit it, like, 3 times. Or, you know, like, it just takes me time to go through the work. So, yeah, you know, you love what's comfortable, you sort of avoid what you can, and you struggle at it, but yeah, I like school. I think
Did you have a particular teacher that has influenced you and that you've kept thinking of today?
Yeah, this is an easy one. I think two, particularly in my life, I clearly remember and clearly. One was in high school. So my junior and senior year, Mr. Henry, was both my math and science teacher. So, of course, at a small school, teachers also have to do double duty. And so, as a junior, right, he was teaching both pre-calc and physics. And then as a senior, right, he was doing physics AP and calc. And he, you know, he designed the courses so they go together. So it would make sense to me. I'm like, yeah, the math we're doing makes sense because we're using it here. And it would be like the same class or the class. So he'd intertwine it so it would work together. I'm like, this is, of course, this is brilliant. And you know, and he, I think he understood the importance of, like, having fun and independence. I very, very clearly remember a project he had us do in physics. It might have been AP Physics, but he had us design and make different sorts of, like, equipment that he would use in physics. And so one group made a pinhole camera, right? And so he was going to use it then in future years to work with students and teach them about optics and light and mirrors and the whole thing. And then one group made a hover, I don't want to call it hovercraft, but like a hoverboard, puck something. They took, like, the circle, they built these vacuum cleaner motors on it, and they powered it so that you could, like, sit on it and it'd be like for frictionless motion, right? So it would push you up off the ground like a hovercraft, and then they could test, like, frictionless motion, which is really cool. And my best friend and I, Asif, right? So we were going to work together, and he suggested that we build an air cannon.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you know where this is going, right? An air cannon so that he could use it to do projectile motion, right? And so we're going to actually talk about this when we get to quadratics and parabolas and everything else, but, you know, everything follows a parabolic motion. So he wanted to have this cannon where they could fire objects off, and you can measure distance and like speed and all this stuff and height. And so he's like, okay, so we're talking about the design, how we're going to do this, and we're using PVC pipes, and you have this big container which holds all the air, and then you pump the air in. And we had a gauge, right? You put the gauge on so you can test it, and then the nozzle. And he's like, well, let's use 1-inch ball bearings. And they're like, okay. 1-inch ball bearings are huge. They're huge, and they're super heavy. And so the very first time, we had no idea what we were doing. So, you know, this gauge goes from 0 to, I don't know, it's like a bike pump gauge, so probably like 50, and we've got the pump there. And we built it, and we're trying to test it, see whether there's leaks, whether it's going to work. We have to figure out whether to release. And he's like, just pump it up to like 5 pounds per square inch. We're like, come on. Like, it's not even going to, the ball's not even going to make it out of the nozzle, right? It'll just be like, thunk. So we're like, fine. So pump it up, and we cheat a little bit. We're like, oh, we went past it. We're at 8. Oh, well, you know, we'll see. And so we have it outside in this parking lot, right? And across, like, I would say, like, 70 yards away on the other side of this parking lot, the lower schoolers are all playing at recess, no. Right? And so we're just like, whatever, it's going to thump out. We release it, and it was just laying on the ground. This 1-inch ball bearing shoots out, like, flies out. It's like, boom! Shoots across the parking lot and, you know, misses the group by, like, 10 feet. And we're like, oh, crap, what have we done? So we're like, at that moment, we were so nervous. And then we realized what we had. We're like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. We built this thing. This is awesome. So we had a blast going out and doing the experiments. Like, we found the biggest field we could. And, like, I'm out there. As awesome as shooting this thing off, I'm 200 yards away, like, trying to find where it lands. Probably not the wisest thing to be on that end of it, but I wasn't always that wise. And then at some point, we realized that paintballs would fit into our cannon. So I think he, you know, Mr. Henry didn't get pissed or upset. He realized, right, that the joy of us doing it got us to do, like, this amazing stuff with it. So I always think of that. And then I had a professor in college who, he really encouraged me at the right times and really sort of, like, helped me find my passions in economics. And so it was really cool how he just, like, invited me to work with him and just helped me, you know, again, find my path. So I always think about those two teachers and how they sort of helped me, not in ways of telling me what to do, but in just in helping me figure out my own path at the time. So that's really cool. Yeah.
And what did that path lead to? So what did you do out of college?
So I thought I was headed toward business. So I started college as a philosophy major. I decided partway through sophomore year that I wanted to add a double major of economics. And so I finished with both philosophy and economics. And I, you know, again, found that passion with econ and especially the experimental side. And sophomore year, I started looking at, like, graduate programs and what I was going to do afterwards. So I was really thinking, like, I'm headed toward finance. I'm headed toward that sort of area. I had a friend, one of my best friends in college. She did the summer camp after our freshman year. So we were same year after our freshman year. And she came back, and she's like, you've got to do this. You'll love this. You'll enjoy it. It's up in New Hampshire. It's called Summerbridge. So my sophomore year, I'm like, okay, I need a summer job. I'll do this, right? She thinks it'll be good for me. So I'm thinking summer camp. And so I apply. It's, like, really long. I'm like, wow, they really want to know a lot of stuff to be a counselor. Like, this is pretty intense. Like, it's really, really in depth. And somehow I missed that this was, like, really about teaching. And my mom was a teacher. And the last thing I ever imagined myself doing was being a teacher. I totally was like, I'm never going to be a teacher. Never going to be a teacher. So I show up the first week of this, you know, camp. And it is a full-on, like, school. Like, it's high school and college kids learning how to teach. And it's middle schoolers from at-risk neighborhoods and inner-city kids who are really smart and really intelligent and want to do well in school, but they don't have opportunities to do well. And so the program allows the kids to get some basic and essential skills so that they can get ahead, as well as help high school and college kids learn some stuff about engaging younger kids and teaching and how to embrace that. And so I'm there for this orientation. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so in the wrong place. I'm like, this is going to be terrible. And the kids show up on the first day, and I'm like, this is the most amazing thing ever. I fell in love with it, like, right away. Just, you know, I had so much fun. And so then I had a great summer, loved it. I get back junior year, and I'm working with my professor, and he suggests that I apply for this program, which would, he's like, I'll recommend you for this program. It's at Fordham, 2 years, you get 2 masters, you'll go straight to Wall Street. I'm like, this is super cool. And then I'm like, but I love this teaching thing. I'm like, it feels so different, right?
Did your professor think you were crazy?
No, right. No, he was not at all like that. Like, he was so supportive. Like, he didn't push me towards it. But he was just sort of encouraging this passion that I had for the econ, but within my goals, not his. And so he never was like, what are you doing? Or anything like that. I remember having this, like, crisis of conscience of, like, what do I do? Like, do I, like, make this switch toward this teaching thing that I think I love, that after one summer was interesting? Or do I, like, keep pursuing, you know, this vision of what I had? And I had a conversation with my brother-in-law. And I remember we went out to eat beef on weck. Classic buffalo dish, beef on weck. If you ever have a chance, it's a roast beef sandwich on a kimmelweck roll, which is a salted and seeded, caraway seeded roll. Amazing, with horseradish. You'll love it. So we went out, had these beef on weck, and we were having this conversation. He said, no matter what you do, right? No matter what your income, no matter what it is, you got to be happy. You have to wake up every morning and be happy with your job. And if you go to work every day and you're not happy, then it's not worth it. There's nothing that you will, nothing else in your life will go well if you're not happy with your job. And so I was like, God, you know, my real joy is teaching. Like, I loved it. And so that sort of, like, pushed me toward pursuing that. So I worked for the next 2 summers at the same teaching program at Summerbridge. And they helped me send out my resume, helped me make the connections, and that's how I ended up here at Moses Brown, is that my resume ended up here through them. And at that point, I knew that that's what I wanted to pursue. Like, that was, like, it was clear to me by then. And I don't regret it. I actually have a tough time thinking about, like, what that alternate reality might be like, or, like, gosh, I can't imagine myself, like, throwing on the suit every day and trudging in. Like, I can't, I can't do that. So yeah, that's how I ended up in teaching, and and I'm still happy. I still love my job. Still love it.
That's a great story.
It is.
So tell me about your first day teaching. What were you always teaching middle school?
Yeah. So I remember, I don't know if I remember my first day. That was a while ago. But I do remember some of the stuff that happened right at the beginning. And I was so young. I was 21 when I started teaching. And I looked even younger. Like, I looked really young. I remember a couple times in the first couple months, I had parents come up to me like, oh, you know, you're new. How's your first day? You know, how's it going? And, like, how are your teachers? I'm like, yeah, actually, I'm not an upper school student. I'm a teacher, but thank you very much, right? Yeah, that was great. But I felt like I wanted to, you know, it was a strange thing. I felt like I needed to make this, like, and I needed to be, like, very clear about being old. And it was silly, right, at the time. Because I didn't understand the Moses Brown, like, culture yet. And so I came in, and I was like, I said to the head of the middle school at the time, Mr. English, I said, I think I'm going to go by Mr. Ole. You know, because I want to be, like, you know, the authority figure. I want to be old. I want to make sure that they understand that I'm a teacher, right? And I had this big vision of, like, what that was going to look like. And he's like, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. He's like, no one else does it. He's like, that would be really strange. He's like, you need to go by Dan. I really, you know, think so. And so, you know, eventually I got it. I do remember one incident, though, that happened. You know, I don't think it was the first day, but it was close to. I had interviewed numerous times. I came back several times. And I found out later they were nervous about me being young, right? Because I was young. I was 21. And I had one teacher who was, like, a super big advocate for me. I found this out later. And her name was Mrs. Heckman. Louise Heckman, but she went by Mrs. Heckman, and she was older, and she was that stern school marm, like that, like she would grab kids' ears when they misbehave. It was called the Heckman hold, and she'd come up to them and grab them by the ear, and she'd be like, and you'd be like, oh. So, you know, very, you know, traditional, and very, you know, she wasn't mean, she was wonderful. But she was, like, sort of very formal, and she had started teaching, I don't know, gosh, she must have been teaching, you know, in the 50s, when it was all boys, and, you know, generations of kids knew Louise Heckman and the Heckman Hold. And so she was on team two, and so I interviewed with her, and she was one of my advocates. She really thought that I would do well. So, again, being young, I wanted to portray myself as being mature and, you know, but I wasn't. And so when I interviewed, the very first time, I show up in, like, the full suit. Like, the tie, the full suit, like, so formal. And, of course, everyone around here is much more casual. I was way overdressed, like, so, like, ridiculously overdressed. But even as I went through the interview process, you're trying to impress, right? So you're trying to, like, you know, make sure that you're making a good impression. Well, I wasn't stupid, right? I had earrings. And so I knew, right, as I'm like, you don't have to share everything with everybody right away. So every time I interviewed, I would take out my earrings. And, you know, I was, like, trying to impress. And so it was the first day of the teachers, the last day of summer and the first day of, like, the teachers being at school without the kids. I'd been hired. So, of course, you know, I have a job now. I don't need to impress everyone. Of course I'm going to wear my earrings because I always wear my earrings. So I show up my earrings and I say, hello, Mrs. Heckman. I go on. And later that day, the head of the middle school, Jim English, he's like, Dan, can we talk? And I'm like, I haven't even been here. Like, what did I do? Oh, I was like, what is going on? So he pulls me into the office, and he's like, well, so this is not a problem, but you should know that Mrs. Heckman came to me, and she's like, Dan's got earrings, he never wore earrings before. And he's like, you know, we have certain parents who might take it. He's like, you might want to think about, like, what message you're giving off to people, right? It all made sense to me. I was like, you know, it's not worth it to me to, like, make a statement or fight. And at that point, I actually took out my earrings, and I for a couple of years. I eventually started wearing my earrings again. Once I felt like I was established and people knew me as me, right, then it wasn't about the earrings. But at that point, for some people, it was about the earrings. So I don't remember that. Mrs. Heckman came to me. Man. I lived in the boarding community here. The very last year that we had boarders was my first year. And so actually as a 21-year-old, I ended up being like, you know, like responsible for these kids in the dorm. And there was only like 20 of them. But I remember that too. That was a hard like transition for me to think about, which was like I never left school. So like I would go home from work upstairs. And actually this room that we're sitting in was like where the pool table was. Like the kitchen was in John's room. And then the dining room was sort of like where Maureen's room, and this was like a big sitting area. And we had a pool table and couches, and there was a TV. And there were some rooms down by Katie's room, right? And upstairs, the same thing. But I felt like it never went home, right? So I was sort of like, I would go home, and it would be upstairs, and then I'd be like, oh, like, we gotta get the kids to dinner, and then you gotta get them, like, on the weekends, you gotta take them to the mall or whatever it was.
So you lived on Team 3.
Yeah, sort of like living on Team 3. It was...
not Team 3, Team 1.
Team 1, yeah, upstairs. Yeah, and actually my room was sort of like where Mike's classroom is. Like, I had one room. There was like a hallway of like little rooms, and it was down there. It was... So, like, I knew, like, if it hadn't been the last year of the dorm, like, area, like, it was just too small. I wouldn't have done it again, I don't think. Simply because it was sort of like I needed space and I needed like to go away at the end of the day, relax. But it was good. It was a good experience.
So how was teaching different from how you imagined it to be?
It's hard because I don't know if I ever really imagined it to be anything for so long, right? Because I had never, like, saw myself as that. I think biggest things, right? I always felt like there needed to be this huge student-teacher divide. You know, like, I had conversations with my mom, and she was teaching, you know, much earlier, too. And at the time, like, there's just always this student-teacher divide. And so I think that through my own experience of my teachers, like, and the teachers that I loved, right, was sort of like, yeah, you can have relationships with kids, and you can talk about things, and it's like you don't have to have this sort of like, always this space where you're that, you know, they're there, and you're you, and there's nothing in between, right? I think there's a lot of, like this, right, talking about each other's lives and having conversations. So I think that was something that probably in the beginning, you know, I hadn't quite imagined like that. You know, I think I'd hoped for it through my experiences during the summer. Like, cause during the summer, it's school, but it's also a campy feeling. Like, so you feel, you know, like you're getting close to the kids and you have relationships where you're chatting about everything. And, you know, it's sort of like a team kind of thing. So, you know, that's here too. But I don't know if I was expecting that.
I only have a few questions, so StoryCorps is going to stop it in a minute 30, but okay. We can continue because my computer can record.
Sure, for anything you want.
As long as we need. Do you have anything you need to get to after this?
No, I got some time.
Okay. How would you like to be remembered?
Wow. That's a tough one. Tucker, what are you doing? As a teacher or as a person, or what do you think?
As a person?
As a person.
I mean, you're
I'm not really a person. No, I'm not a person as a teacher. I guess, I don't know. Wow, that's a good one. I think I want to be remembered, right? But then I think most of all, you know, you hope to be remembered as someone who's compassionate, someone who cares for more than just the job or the work or whatever needs to happen. You know, like I think about my family, and I hope, right?